Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The war in Afghanistan turns 10 this year, as in 10 years old. Last night, President Obama said the tide of war is receding, and he began to roll out the Afghan numbers.
Starting next month, we will be able to remove 10,000 of our troops from Afghanistan by the end of this year. And we will bring home a total of 33,000 troops by next summer.
Next summer, as in 2012. By 2014, he said, Afghan security will be turned over to Afghans. But that's not quite saying U.S. troops will be gone. Some say they should be gone already. And then there's Pakistan. This hour on Point, the president speaks war weariness, and U.S. strategy in Afghanistan. You can join the conversation. How does the president's timetable, his thinking, look to you? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to look at politics and strategy this hour, debate the drawdown, and hear from one of those mayors saying build in Kansas, not in Kandahar. But first, joining me from Washington to look at what went into reaching the president's numbers is Jerry Seib, Washington bureau chief for The Wall Street Journal. Jerry, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Surprise in Washington at these numbers or not?
Not. I think the basic contours of the drawdown have been signaled for a while now. The big decision in many ways was the one that President Obama made a year ago when he ordered the surge but sort of put some time limits on it. So I think things are playing out pretty much according to script. The drama in Washington was about the details, you know, the precise timing, the exact number of troops that would go out early, and there's some controversy about those. You know, President Obama tried to strike essentially a balance, it seems to me, between the people who wanted a much faster drawdown, to zero would be fine by them now, and the people in the military who wanted a somewhat slower drawdown and wanted the surge to last through the fall of next year, not just through the summer of next year. So what you have is a compromise, but I think the compromises are, for most Americans, probably in the margins. The reality here is that we're going to have a good number of the surge troops in through the summer of next year, and troops in some numbers there through 2014. That hasn't changed.
There was very tough debate over the surge in the first place. Vice President Joe Biden, again it. What about this time? Was it a tough debate over these numbers, or is this kind of just steady as she goes, even with the drawdown?
Well, a little hard to tell how tough it was. There clearly was some debate. As I said, the military's view was they were okay roughly with this timetable. They would have preferred to take 5,000 troops out this year, not 10,000. And they would have preferred to have the president say the rest of the surge troops, that's the 33,000 surge that he ordered in a year ago, the rest of those people would exit next October at the end of the 2012 fighting season, as is known in Afghanistan, not in August of 2012. So they would have preferred a couple more months and maybe a few thousand fewer troops leaving at the outset. And there was serious debate about that. And, you know, people on both sides are a little bit unhappy because nobody got exactly what they wanted. But I don't think it was as intense as the debate last year.
Jerry, did you hear in this speech, did you hear it tuned most to the military realities on the ground in Afghanistan or political realities on the ground here at home? War weariness, the polls all show it, the president facing a reelection campaign. Which is stronger at work here?
Well, I think the most striking thing was the war weariness acknowledgement in the speech. You know, the explicit declaration near the end that we need to start rebuilding at home. We need to rebuild America. Almost in exactly the same terms that war's critics up on Congress mm-hmm. say that we need to rebuild bridges in America, not bridges in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I thought that was striking, only in that it was a much more direct acknowledgement of war weariness than we heard from President Obama.
But do the numbers line up with that, Jerry? I mean, you say that late in the speech, but it's not a rush to get out of there. And there's reports today that the administration is trying to negotiate with Afghanistan to have, I don't know, maybe 25,000 troops to stay on even after 2014.
You know, there's, you know, again, I think that the president was trying to have, was trying to pacify war critics with not with words as much as with numbers. I think that's a reality. And it's odd that some of the war critics, including Nancy Pelosi, the Democrats' own majority leader, minority leader in the House, very unhappy that there aren't more numbers with a downward arrow associated with this policy. So it didn't buy them off. And if that was the goal, it probably wasn't successful. But I think in budget terms, I think the point the president tried to make, and I suspect his minions will make in somewhat more stark terms in coming days, is that the big savings, if that's what you're interested in, really have come from essentially ending the war in Iraq. That was a much bigger sinkhole for American troops and money than Afghanistan has been. And on that front, President Obama will say, I did what I said I was going to do. I ended the active participation of U.S. troops in the war in Iraq, and that's a big money saver.
And Jerry, how do you think the Afghanistan issue is going to play out in 2012 election politics? We saw John Huntsman, who's announced this week that he will join that race for the White House, Republican, of course, saying that it was a little slow and too cautious with withdrawal. It should be, I guess, faster. On the other hand, Pawlenty going after the president for, not going for an all-out victory. How does this play?
Well, that's a fascinating question, because I think that the more interesting debate is probably going to be on the Republican side. I mean, Democrats are grumbling that the president didn't go further, but he's their leader. He's the guy they have to line up behind, and if eventually they'll vote for his war policy, I would suspect, by and large. The interesting debate is on the Republican side, and what do primary Republican voters want to hear this year? Do they want to hear a John McCain-like view of the war in Afghanistan and Libya, frankly, that says essentially we have economic problems, but we're still the leaders of the world. We have to act that way. We have a responsibility, and it's dangerous not to play that role. Or do you have a kind of a John Huntsman, Ron Paul view of the world, which says essentially we need to recede, that this is not a time we can afford this sort of thing, and the Republican Party needs to move in that direction. You know, John McCain looks at that and says we're veering off onto a neo-isolationist track, and that's not where the Republican Party belongs. But I'm not sure that everybody who votes in Republican Party primaries is buying that this year.
A military and political conflict in Afghanistan, a political conflict certainly, with some interesting dimensions to it at home. Jerry Seib, Washington Bureau Chief for the Wall Street Journal, thank you very much for being with us, Jerry.
Happy to join you.
Here's President Obama last night in the East Room, restating this country's mission in Afghanistan.
The goal that we seek is achievable and can be expressed simply. No safe haven from which Al-Qaeda or its affiliates can launch attacks against our homeland or our allies. We won't try to make Afghanistan a perfect place. We will not police its streets or patrol its mountains indefinitely. That is the responsibility of the Afghan government, which must step up its ability to protect its people and move from an economy shaped by war to one that can sustain a lasting peace.
The president last night describing a timetable for drawdown of American surge troops. So too fast, too slow, just right. Let's hear the case. The case is joining us now. From Washington is Michael O'Hanlon, Director of Research, Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution, Senior Author of their Afghanistan Index, co-author with Hasina Shirjan of Toughing It Out in Afghanistan. Michael O'Hanlon, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be with you.
And from Washington, Bing West joins us, former Assistant Secretary of Defense under President Ronald Reagan, former Marine, served in the Vietnam War, was a captain, spent considerable time with U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, author of The Wrong War, Grit, Strategy, and the Way Out of Afghanistan. Bing West, welcome back to you as well.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Bing, first to you, the president's timetable last night, what do you think of it?
Well, I heard Jerry Seib just say that it wasn't a surprise and the military was okay with the timetable. I sort of say, look, our strategy under General Petraeus had been to continue for a few more years in order to retake the critical terrain both in the south and then move to the east.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be very difficult to do now. I think you're going to see a change in strategy. And when the president spoke about war weariness at home as one of the reasons why he did this, I think we also have to consider very carefully the war weariness of our own troops. I was just out in Sangin, which is a district in Helmand Province, with our Marines, and that's quite a slugfest to retake this kind of ground as they have, and you have to be willing to take casualties. And just like we discount the stock market in the future, the same thing happens. We all anticipate the future, and the same thing happens on battlefields. In 1969, when President Nixon announced he was going to start the pullout, there were over 200,000 troops still in Vietnam. But over the next 2 years, Tom, there was a dramatic decrease in the willingness of those soldiers to go out on aggressive patrols because no one wanted, if you will, to be the last person to die in Vietnam.
Bing, hold that thought, if you'd be kind enough.
Okay.
I want to get Michael in
sure.
just before the break. We'll come back to it.
Sure.
But Michael O'Hanlon, you, if I may, before we come to the break here, your first big reaction to these numbers, do they look good, workable to you, or something else?
Well, I think Bing West made the important point to understand the implications of these numbers on the ground, which is that the planned effort to invest more resources in the East and try to do there what we've been doing in the South is now going to be very difficult. And also, we'll have to thin out in the South faster than a lot of our forces would have liked. What they'd like to do is hand off responsibility to Afghan units and essentially still be there for them for the first few months, watch them, help them when needed, have a gradual process of transition. That's now going to have to be accelerated. So on balance, there's still a lot of the essence of the strategy that's there. Efforts to work with the Afghan army and police, for example, in a mentoring capacity to build them up, to train them robustly. We're not going to have to give up land either that we have cleared. We're not going to be so rushed that we have to simply concede to the Taliban land that we had taken back. But this transition will have to be accelerated in the South, and the effort to shore up the East may have to be either postponed or simply stopped and canceled.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the president's drawdown timetable for Afghanistan. The road ahead for a now decade-long war there. Michael O'Hanlon joins us from Washington and the Brookings Institution. Bing West joins us from Washington as well, author of The Wrong War, Grit, Strategy, and the Way Out of Afghanistan. I want to look more at the president's speech, but first, some interesting Republican byplay on this. This is Republican presidential candidate John Huntsman sitting down with ABC's George Stephanopoulos, who asked, and Stephanopoulos asked if he would get the troops out faster. Here was Huntsman, the now Republican contender for the White House. Here was his response.
Well, I think over the next year, I think there's room to draw down more.
How many more?
Well, we'll get serious about the numbers at some point, but I think more aggressively than what is likely
more
to be on the table.
More than 10,000 over the next year.
More than 10,000 over the next year.
Huntsman saying, let's have more out of there. Here's former Minnesota governor and GOP presidential candidate Tim Pawlenty telling Fox News host Bill O'Reilly he doesn't like the Obama withdrawal plan. He doesn't want to talk about ending the war responsibly, as the president did. He said, when America goes to war, you'll hear America needs to win.
I thought his speech tonight was deeply concerning. And look how he phrased the outcome of this war. He said we need to end the war, quote unquote, responsibly. When America goes to war, America needs to win. We need to close out the war successfully. And what that means now is not nation building. What it means is to follow General Petraeus' advice and to get those security forces built up to the point where they can pick up the slack as we draw down.
Two conflicting Republican views of what's going on in the war. And then the president. And I want to ask you, Michael O'Hanlon and Bing West. Michael, you began to speak to this. But here was the president's assertion that this drawdown will begin from a position of strength.
We're starting this drawdown from a position of strength. Al-Qaeda is under more pressure than at any time since 9/11. Together with the Pakistanis, we have taken out more than half of Al-Qaeda's leadership. And thanks to our intelligence professionals and special forces, we killed Osama bin Laden, the only leader that Al-Qaeda had ever known.
All right, Michael O'Hanlon, first to you. If the military is talking about how fragile the gains are, the president is talking about starting the drawdown from a position of strength. Can both be true?
I suppose they can, because, of course, a speechmaker can emphasize the facts he wants for the purposes of his argument. And I think that everything President Obama said yesterday was accurate as far as it went. But I think there is a great deal of fragility still. And, of course, Bing West has done a nice job of underscoring this in his new book. I'm a little more optimistic than he is, perhaps, about the quality of the Afghan army and police. But there's a long ways to go, and everyone would agree on that who spent time over there. And that's something we didn't really hear from the president about. We just heard him say that the forces are 100,000 bigger than they were when he gave his West Point speech. And that's true. And I think they're better, but they have a long ways to go. The Afghan government has a very long ways to go. And so, frankly, I thought he was a little too sanguine in the interest of making the argument that he had chosen to make.
Bing, let's cut right to the chase. In your view, you spent a lot of time there, paid a lot of attention, worked in the Pentagon.
What in your view would be the ideal timetable? How fast should we be drawing down?
Well, we've done it, so we are where we are, Tom. I think that the
but if you were president, would you be on the same drawdown schedule he outlined last night, or something else?
Only if I had talked to my generals first about what and changed the strategy. The problem is that General Petraeus wanted to re-seize the country mm-hmm. by using American forces first and then turn it over to the Afghans. That's not going to happen now. Now we're going to have to shift gears and say we're not going to end up doing, as Michael was indicating, we're not going to end up going back into the East. So now the new general, because General Petraeus is leaving, the new general, General Allen, is going to have to change his mission and focus tremendously on saying to the Afghan army, you have to have the incentives and you have to have the nerve to go out there on that battlefield with the Taliban. And I think we're going to have to go to many more advisors to try to make this work. This is going to be tough, Tom. On the battlefield, this is going to be tough because the moral is to the physical is 10 to 1. And if the Taliban think, you know, now it looks good for them. General Allen has a real challenge on his hands.
Tough or a fantasy may be the question. President Singh last night, still very big challenges ahead there.
Of course, huge challenges remain. This is the beginning, but not the end, of our effort to wind down this war. We'll have to do the hard work of keeping the gains that we've made while we draw down our forces and transition responsibility for security to the Afghan government.
To the Afghan government. Michael O'Hanlon, how do you see if there's a change in strategy here? If these numbers dictate a change in focus, can you say to the Afghan forces, you do it, you go complete what we began but now won't have the troops to do? Is that realistic, or is this really an entirely different approach?
Well, it's a substantially changed approach. And in fairness to the president, this is, you know, art as much as science, how to get the Afghans to do more. And again, if I could make a plug for Bing's book, he's addressed this issue head on and acknowledged the challenge and laid out his own alternative thinking. And there is room for a fair amount of debate. But I tend to think that the strategy that General Caldwell, who's in charge of our training command there, and General Rodriguez, who's in charge of partnering American NATO forces with Afghans in the field, I think their strategy has been clicking pretty well lately. It's been making a lot of headway. And now we're going to have to fundamentally change that, at least in some parts of the country. So I'm nervous. You know, Jerry Sieb earlier made it sound like it was just August versus October. That's a little bit of a trivialization of what's going on here. Now, next fighting season is going to be a time period when we have to worry a lot about drawing down forces rather than doing the fight together and then only drawing down as the winter arrives in late 2012, which is what commanders would have, I think, preferred. So there's a big change here. Part of it is how we partner with the Afghans in the field and mentor them and carry out this form of apprenticeship. Part of it is our ability to deal with these very tough Taliban and Haqqani network sanctuaries in the east, which have been hugely problematic. We haven't yet made enough inroads, and now we may not have the forces to do it. So, you know, I'm on balance a supporter of the president's Afghanistan policy over the last 2.5 years, but I'm least comfortable with what I heard yesterday, and specifically the idea of getting most of those forces out by September of next year. That just strikes me as 4 to 6 months too fast.
4 to 6 months, and yet 10 years, long time already. Keith,
well,
in Boston.
Just one point,
yes,
Tom.
Yes,
sure, 10 years since we started, but only a year and a half since the president's West Point speech, and only about a year since the full suite of forces has arrived in country. So 4 to 6 months in that context is substantial.
But, you know, I mean, the question that people still go to is, you hear all kinds of reports on the Afghan troops and whether they'll ever be ready, you know, whether there's always another 4 to 6 months that we'll need, and it would never quite come to a point where there's real security in an American withdrawal.
They provided 50% of the forces in the major clearing operations in the South last year. They had never even done anything close to that before. So, again, I think the progress in the last 2 years has been very substantial, especially in the last 1 year, and I'm uncomfortable with sort of jettisoning a strategy that's starting to click.
Keith in Boston, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've enjoyed this discussion, and I'll tell you, I was a bit, I won't say I was surprised by what I heard last night, but I was very disappointed that the president didn't rise above fairly transparent political considerations.
What, you think it's too fast out, too slow out? What?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's definitely too fast out. I mean, the Americans can't be there forever. And I should say I spent a year running with frontline combat units throughout eastern and southern Afghanistan.
Okay.
Working for the International Security Assistance Force. And most of the time I was also embedded with Afghan National Army troops. And I can tell you, I mean, right now, the numbers, at the moment, we have 100, rather, the Afghans have 164,000 Afghan National Army members. The projection they're looking to have by 2014, they want their numbers up significantly. And
are they going to be ready to take over in 2014 or as American surge troops come home, Keith?
Well, my experience, I mean, the Americans only really focused on training the ANA, or I should say coalition and American troops, in 2008. And you can't just, you know, snap your fingers and expect good troops. And I think there are a lot of, you know, highly motivated Afghan soldiers, but there are a lot that aren't. I know that when I was running with them, the big concern was always that, you know, somewhere between 12 and 20% were sympathetic to Hizb Islami or the Taliban.
I mean, yeah, so, President Karzai's calling the U.S. NATO troops occupiers. You get all kinds of corruption there. We hear about the Afghan troops just sort of drifting away from the job or not standing up to fight when the moment comes. Is that a matter of time and number of U.S. forces?
It is with President Karzai.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, you know, how can you expect to instill confidence in an Afghan government after the Americans leave if he continues to do what he's doing? I mean, he's both incompetent and he's a crook.
But there's the reality on the ground. Keith, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more. Jerry, Earhart, South Carolina. Jerry, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Reason I'm calling is that I also spent a tour at eastern Afghanistan in 02 to 03.
Okay.
I'll try to be brief. I have a number of comments. Number one, if you recall back in the late 60s, early 70s, the National Guard said it was called on to the campuses were immediately viewed as occupiers and so forth.
In this country. Process. Okay, but let take us to Afghanistan, Jerry.
Right. When we were there, we were almost loved. They viewed us as the strongest tribe, and they loved to have us there. We wasted 9 years. They were training ANA, the African National Army, when I was there.
You know, 2003, so what about now? Should we hang in or get out faster? Do you like the pace the president describes?
Get out faster. If you'll think about things, the mission we had over there, or have over there, has morphed from destroying the Taliban and getting bin Laden into destroying, or excuse me, has morphed from getting the Al-Qaeda and killing bin Laden, and now it's killing or destroying Taliban. I haven't heard any comments to that effect. The Taliban are an indigenous force. They're an offshoot of Islam. And it's none of our business if they run the country there or not. They are not a threat to the United States. Al-Qaeda is, and we're being told these days there are only, what, a couple hundred Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan?
Yeah, Jerry, that's exactly right. That's what we hear. Let me bring it up, take it up with Michael O'Hanlon and Bing West. I mean, Bing, first to you, you know, on the mission front, what exactly is it now? Is it nation building? If it's just counterinsurgency or counterterror, exactly who is targeted? Is Taliban included in that? We're talking with Taliban, Bob Gates says. Could they take over and that would be all right? Or is this really about Pakistan now, Bing, and a base to keep an eye on that nuclear-armed neighbor?
No, I think that the basic mission now is pretty clear, and that is you cannot have disintegration in Afghanistan such that the country just falls apart and the Taliban end up taking Kabul. That would be an absolute disaster for the United States of America. And therefore, the mission, Tom, more than anything else, mm-hmm. that General Allen has to undertake is to inject confidence into an Afghan army that has been laggard. And part of that is because we did so much for them for so many years, as Jerry and Keith were saying. We gave them so much money. We did so much of the fighting for them that they have developed a culture of entitlement. They're entitled, and we're going to do something to help them. And now General Allen has to go over and say, those days are over, and in a few years you're on your own. And that's the huge challenge. His mission now, more than anything else, is to inject confidence into the Afghan army.
Michael O'Hanlon, can it work? By 2014, the president's saying that they would take on the bulk of security operations. If we hang in that long, and you've got plenty of Americans, Republicans and Democrats, saying, let's get out faster, it's costing billions every week. But let's say we hang in that long at the strength level he's describing. You know, are we dreaming, or can this actually stand up, Michael?
I think it can work reasonably well, but let me be clear about my standard for success. Mm-hmm. I don't expect some, you know, incredibly prosperous Afghan democracy. What I do think is that they can develop a strong enough security force to control most of their territory on their own, or at least with minimal outside help. There may still be pockets of insurgency. In fact, I'm almost sure there will be. There may still be even pockets of extremism of people who would want to attack the United States, and maybe even more al-Qaeda after we've gone. Because let's face it, al-Qaeda now, if they're choosing between the Pakistan Fatah region and Afghanistan, there are only American drones that can hit them in Pakistan. There are more than 100,000 prime NATO forces that can hit them in Afghanistan. So as that changes over time, they may move a bit back to Afghanistan. But as long as they can't have a big sanctuary that would become their most dominant and most useful anywhere on the planet, we can live with a bit of instability. We can live with some ongoing insurgency. We can frankly live with Afghanistan looking like Colombia or Mexico. That's not a very pretty picture, but it's just to say the threat needs to be contained. It doesn't need to be eliminated. And I think that standard is attainable.
How do you ride that line, the difference between instability and, let's say, civil war or a Taliban takeover in Kabul?
Well, Taliban takeover in Kabul and civil war are both unacceptable by these standards. What I'm talking about are pockets in the hills of eastern Afghanistan or southern Afghanistan, generally rural areas, where I'm not sure the Afghan government's going to be able to eliminate any and all sanctuaries. And I'm not sure, frankly, it's essential that they do so for our interests or even for their own. So I'm talking about an insurgency that's probably going to have another 10-year life even after we're gone. But as long as the geographic scope is contained, it's probably not a major threat.
James in Iowa City, Iowa. James, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I just wanted to comment that as the brother of a soldier who served three tours in Iraq, and last weekend or earlier this month, Afghanistan, on his fourth deployment in combat, was struck by an IED and recently went through surgery to have his foot fixed.
Good luck to him.
I think that we paid our price. I think we've done enough. I think it's time that other nations step up and start helping more. I think that as Islamic nations speak of peace, they can take more of a role in assuring that we don't build a nation that is going to be a haven for more anti-American behavior. But I sympathize with the Afghani people. They are two, three generations into a country that is just destroyed by, you know, bad politics and even worse, destruction.
But the U.S. has paid enough at this point, you say. And, James, we wish your brother good luck with his recovery. And I appreciate your call from Iowa City. Bing, 2014. You think we'll be out then? Or do you think we're going to have another presidential speech? Who knows who will be in the East Room saying, well, we're not quite there. Another couple years, please.
No, Tom, I think we'll be out in 2014, but I should say to you and your listeners something that is going to be a gas to you, but look, we just have to put it on the table. In order for us to have any kind of stability whatsoever in Afghanistan, the cost for the Afghan army alone is about $8 to $10 billion a year as a straight transfer payment from us to them for the next 10 years. So we're talking a minimum of another $100 billion going to the Afghan army. And no one, so it doesn't just stop in 2014.
Yeah.
And but if we don't, we end up like we did in Vietnam, whereas we began to pull out in 72, we cut the money for the South Vietnamese forces each year. So the problems here are huge, and yet they're small compared to the problems we have here at home.
Bing West, thank you so much for being with us. Author of The Wrong War and Michael O'Hanlon of Toughing It Out in Afghanistan. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president's drawdown timetable for Afghanistan, the road ahead for a now decade-long war there. The debate over American deployment in Afghanistan has very much come home. U.S. mayors this week voting on a resolution to build American cities, not cities in war zones. We're going to hear in just a moment that perspective and the pushback. The president talking about that last night, saying that it's time to turn to focus on citizens here at home.
Over the last decade, we have spent $1 trillion on war at a time of rising debt, and hard economic times. Now we must invest in America's greatest resource, our people. We must unleash innovation that creates new jobs and industries while living within our means. We must rebuild our infrastructure and find new and clean sources of energy.
And then this, his bottom line.
America, it is time to focus on nation building here at home.
But can we do both? Joining us now from Washington is Tom Donnelly, director of the American Enterprise Institute's Center for Defense Studies, co-author with Frederick Kagan of Lessons for a Long War, How America Can Win on New Battlefields. Tom Donnelly, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Also with us from Pembroke Pines, Florida, is Frank Ordis, the mayor of Pembroke Pines. Mayor Ordis recently signed on to a bipartisan resolution at the U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting in Baltimore calling for a speedy withdrawal of American troops from Iraq and Afghanistan and a redistribution of America's war dollars toward domestic projects. 175 mayors voted on the resolution. All but one voted for it. Mayor Ordis, welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So here you were, one of the many, many mayors who said, bring the money home, Mr. President. You heard his timetable last night. Did you hear a response to your call for spending and attention here, Mr. Mayor?
Actually, the president last night, almost verbatim, talked about our metro's economies that were released at the U.S. Conference of Mayors, that talked about our infrastructure needs and the needs of this great country. 6,000, over 6,000 lives have been lost in our wars. $126 billion, and I hear the president talking about trillions. We've got to invest in our infrastructure, in our cities. And it needs to come back into, the money needs to come back, because we are fledgling all over this great country. No matter what city you go to, except for maybe a few, we don't have the money to invest in our infrastructure. And we have old, crumbling infrastructure, bridges, roads, those kinds of things, water pipe. We need to start catching up. China's 20 years ahead of us, and they're hiring all these engineers, and we're behind the eight ball.
Mayor Ordis,
trying to get our country back on track.
Yeah, we hear that message, and we saw it in the mayor's resolution, but it's one thing to give lip service to that, and another to act in such a way that those resources would actually potentially become available. Look at his timetable. Is it a timetable that responds to the need, in your view?
And I'm not going to get into the content of a resolution. People smarter than I, such as the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Commander-in-Chief, who everyone elected as President of the United States, will make those important decisions. The mayors of this great country, and you read that number, 175, signed that resolution, bipartisan. We support our troops. Thank God for our troops keeping us free. And I have the terrible task of taking some of the bodies that have been killed in Pembroke Pines in Afghanistan, coming home to greet them with the families.
So it's interesting. You're calling for more resources, but you're not going to complain about the president's timetable. You're just going to salute and say, that's fine. Yes, sir.
Well, again, I'm not the one to say, I'd like to have it real soon, to have this war over. But again, it's up to the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the president. But I see we're on the right track, and that's what the U.S. Conference of Mayors resolution is saying. Get some resources back in this country. The mayor of Kabul, nice gentleman, was there at our conference talking about getting more infrastructure money for Afghanistan. Well, that's very nice, but I'd like to have more infrastructure money for Pembroke Pines in the United States. We need it.
Tom Donnelly, we've got a lot of response to the conversation and to the president's speech today, and let me just get your reaction here, because I know you've talked about, you know, long war and lessons we can learn there and hanging in. But here, Chris writes, he says, we, the United States, are a failed state. 22 million plus unemployed, 25 million on food stamps, 55 million with no health insurance, one in four kids living in poverty. He writes, we don't want to spend trillions on the military while this country is falling apart. It's a version of that argument that the mayors made last week. Tom, what do you say to it as an argument for speeding up withdrawal?
Well, I'm sympathetic to the argument because I think the federal government's investment priorities, if you will, have been misallocated for a very long time now. However, to make the connection between lacking investment or slowing investment in infrastructure and the military, and particularly the war costs, I think is the wrong connection to make. Unfortunately,
why?
Our federal,
why? I mean,
because that's not where the money is to begin with. I would say the government has essentially invested in consumption, if you will. both in things like the housing market that became overinflated and now is a tremendous fiscal problem for us. But also the nature of the government's investments has changed so radically over the past two generations to the point where entitlement spending, which largely goes to the middle class and to the elderly, which is the most—
Thank God.
The elderly are no longer the poor.
Well, I've got a lot of elderly in my city that are, and I think across this nation they are. And you make the argument—
But that's statistically just not the case.
The investment part. Let me tell you something. Those troops that are going to be coming home, where's the jobs for those troops? The unemployment in this country is dismal. It's high. Where are we going to put those troops? When you see in a paper, New York Times, and I just saw it when I was in the U.S. Conference of Mayors, where a soldier lost his leg from an IED, but back in combat, protecting us here in this country to make sure that we have jobs and to feed the elderly and keep them happy. Let's get it back in this country. I think you're right about our Congress not allocating, but we need to focus on that and say it is time. It is time. It is beyond time.
Not Kandahar, but Kansas City. Stand by, Mayor Ordaz and Tom Donnelly. Let's get our listeners in here. Mario in Sterling, Massachusetts. Mario, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hello, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I agree very much with what the mayor is saying, but I also want to add that, first of all, we need to stop being hypocrites. Our government, trying to sell the people something that is not true. For instance, we didn't go into Iraq because we love the Iraqi people. We're not in Afghanistan because we love the Afghans. I mean, I would like to say that, but we're not. The other thing is, if anybody considering the bigger picture here, we spent almost $2 trillion in these two wars so far, and we put our economy in shambles. I mean, we could have fixed Social Security, health care, all kinds of other things for millions of Americans. Also, while we're doing that, our competitors, our economic competitors, Russia, China, who owns trillions of dollars of our debt, and India and so forth.
Hey, but Mario, let me ask you, if I may, Tom Donnelly says, don't look at the war spending if you want to get our fiscal house in order. Look at entitlements like Social Security and spending on the elderly. That's the place
The war, we're spending money digging holes in other people, in other countries, that are also insignificant. Entitlements and things at home are at least for the American people. Every dollar we put in the economy at home generates multiple times its value in consumption and in other economic activity. Every hole we dig in Afghanistan sits there and it dies there.
That hole in Afghanistan, though, Mario, that is where the 9/11 planners got their marching orders. Do you worry about chaos there in the future coming back to hit us again or not?
No, because, if we put a fraction of what we spend over there at home safeguarding our borders and so forth, we will probably be very safe. Nobody has the capability to strike at us from Afghanistan, as far as I know. And Pakistan, by the way, people that say we ought to watch Pakistan and the nuclear weapons. Let India watch Pakistan. India's got 1 billion people. They got nuclear weapons. And they're more than capable of watching what Pakistan does. Besides, there's China, too, on the other side. So,
Mario, I appreciate your call. Tom Donnelly, what about this argument that al-Qaeda can now organize and strike from lots of places, doesn't need Afghanistan, doesn't need Pakistan, for that matter. So bin Laden's dead. Let's edge out of there, maybe quicker.
Well, again, I'm also sympathetic to – I think we've hit al-Qaeda central, as it were, Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda, the guys who are hiding in the hills of Pakistan, extremely hard over the last 10 years. But I would say that isn't – I mean, and we're now sort of going to reap the consequences of having framed the military engagement there entirely in those very narrow terms. Mario mentioned Pakistan. I have to tell you, I'm scared to death about Pakistan, which does have 100 nuclear weapons and is building more all the time. I'm also not entirely sanguine about the balance of nuclear power between India and Pakistan. They've come very close to actually fighting a nuclear war within the past decade. So I think the United States has a huge interest in ensuring that South Asia doesn't become, as the Balkans were to Europe in the past century, kind of a sucking chest wound that draws in great powers and creates a large scale conflict.
And that's where NATO needs to step up to the plate and put more people in. You know, the United States is a great, great country, and we take care of everyone. And I couldn't agree with you more, Mr. Donnelly, about the fears. Every night I go to bed fearing that someone from abroad may strike us. But again, I think we've got to look at this. This is the greatest recession since the Great Depression. And if we don't get our country in shape, we won't be able to defend or pay for those kinds of conflicts. So let's get our country back. I believe I agree with Mario, and let's get the money back in this great country and build our...
There's a lot of money that the federal government is spending in this country. I would rather see some of those dollars reallocated from entitlement.
But it's the war money that's on the table here, Tom, and you're saying no, leave it alone.
That is a small pile of money by comparison.
Doesn't look so small.
That's right.
I wish I had $1 billion.
How about a trillion? How about two? I have to say right here, I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the drawdown timetable for Afghanistan with Tom Donnelly and Mayor Frank Ortiz of Pembroke Pines, Florida. This is On Point. Mr. Mayor, let me ask you. You're very effective at laying out the need in this country for infrastructure improvements, for economic improvements, but then comes back the argument that there's a big strategic threat out there and we have no choice but to go and address it. What do you do at that point as a politician? Do you sit down and shut up and say, okay, whatever you guys say, that's right, or not?
First of all, I've never sat down to shut up.
Okay, we hear that.
But, again, the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the great commander-in-chief of our country make those strategic decisions. Secretary Gates was very good on CNN last week when he said about the timetable drawdown. And I'm agreeing with the president on that timetable that he talked about. But again, greater minds than mine, I'm going to focus, and the mayors are going to focus, on the infrastructures and the needs of our cities. We have to keep them vibrant. If we don't, and if we fall behind China, India, and all these other countries, we're in big trouble because we'll never... I heard from economic advisors, we may not need those people that were unemployed because of technology. I almost fell out of my chair. So again, I go back to those troops that are coming home. We have to have jobs for them. We have to have health care for them. We have to be able to repair their mental needs that might be from this war. We need money for that. Let's spend it in our great country. That's the only thing the mayors are saying in this Metro Economies brochure that came out says exactly that.
Sean in Springfield, Tennessee. Thanks for calling, Sean. You're on.
Yes, I just want to make a brief comment that it seems to me that the government and these mayors, they're focusing on the wrong problems. You know, they're saying infrastructure, but what they're not focusing on is these veterans who have been sacrificing for this country and being sent home with nothing, no help, no aid.
I just said that.
Yeah, but Mayor Ortiz is saying that. He wants to...
He is now.
Well,
what we're worried about is more so about their bridges, their roads, beautifying their cities.
Don't we need bridges and help for veterans coming back from these wars,
Absolutely.
Sean? Don't
Absolutely.
We need them both?
It's not just the veterans. I mean, this is all tax-paying Americans who are no longer able to pay taxes, no longer able to provide for their families.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Sean, we've got it. And one more, Auburn, Alabama. Peter, you're on the air, Peter.
All right, Tom. Just a quick few points. Obama's going to lose a lot of the youth vote. I myself and a lot of other college students voted for him to draw down the troops. So you're probably going to see a lot of those votes going to probably someone like Ron Paul in the 2012 election because he's the only anti-war candidate. Also, to allude to a previous point by your caller about the Taliban, is a main reason why they're frustrated with us, main reason why the Saudi Arabians were frustrated with us, because they're occupying their countries, and we have been occupying their countries for 40, 50 years, bombing them. They're mad because we're occupying their countries, not because we're free and prosperous. And also, you know, we talk about drawing down 33,000 troops. You know, there's no talk about the defense contractors. A lot of people who are over there are defense contractors, so they can fudge the numbers all they want.
Peter, we have the perspective. Mayor Ortiz, what about, we'll look at Republicans, but what about Democrats here? Will this work for President Obama in the campaign? Is this where, you know, you're a Democrat there in Florida. Is this responding to what you think Democratic voters want in terms of emphasis?
I think it is, and I think the caller that just called in is absolutely right, the youth getting back to our country. And, you know, it is very difficult to take and inherit two wars in this great country and then have to pay for them. I mean, the President of the United States, we could say say everything about him, and for 2 years, but inherited a debt. You know, so we've got to get out of it, and I think he's trying to get out of it, and I'm going to help him as the mayor of this great city and the mayors of this great country. We're trying to help them, give them ideas, and we're all trying to work together. That's what you do. You work together, federal government, state government, you know, and city government.
Let me put this to Tom Donnelly, if I may, Mr. Mayor. Tom, what about on the Republican side? You know, there's kind of a split screen there. John Hunt's been saying there's room to draw down more than the president's suggesting. It's slow. It's cautious, he says. Where do you think the GOP candidate ultimately will come down here, faster or slower than President Obama?
Well, Governor Huntsman is the anomaly among the Republican field. You quoted from Tim Pawlenty earlier in the program.
Yes, we did.
Also, Michelle Bachmann was very strong.
He's a very prominent outlier then. In other words, you think they're going to come down for longer?
Yeah,
more?
The Republican Party hasn't changed that profoundly yet.
We will see soon enough. It's a hot issue, and even with the president's speech, many unresolved issues underneath this. Lots of needs here. Tom Donnelly at the American Enterprise Institute, thank you so much for joining us this hour, Tom.
My pleasure.
And Mayor Frank Ordus in Pembroke Pines, Florida, one of the many mayors who voted this week for bringing resources home. Mayor Ordus, thank you very much for joining us today. Listeners, thanks for being with us. You can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.